Hi, I'm Niv.
Hi, I'm Martin.
And we are Asteroids in Exile.
Teach me.
Bam! Welcome to episode 3 of our awesome podcast, Asteroids in Exile. Yes, we finally got here after months and months of planning and trying to get this to happen.
Yeah, and beating technology to the punch.
Oh, yeah, today nothing was working. Cool, so what do we got on the list today?
On the list is the Age of Apocalypse trailer. X-Men Age of Apocalypse, to be exact.
Yeah, that should be exciting. Suicide Squad, Doctor Strange, and Rogue One as well. So all those trailers came out. There's a lot of trailers coming out lately. It's great. Yeah. And then, of course, I guess going to be the center point of today's episode. Batman v Superman. Now that we both finally and potentially reluctantly watched it, we can discuss that. Daredevil season 2 also wrapped up on Netflix, or dropped on Netflix. And you've seen the whole thing, right?
I've seen the whole thing, yeah.
Okay, cool. So have I. So that's good. And then tonight, Game of Thrones. Very exciting stuff indeed. And then if we have time, I guess we'll get to some comic recommendations, some random discussion about toys and whatever else crosses our path.
Whatever else comes to mind.
Yeah. All right, cool. So let's start at the top of the list then. So Age of Apocalypse, first trailer. The first official trailer, even though we've seen like so much random scenes coming out of it from the studio. What did you think?
It looks good. I can't deny that. I dig the voice they gave Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But it feels I've watched it shortly before we started the podcast, and it somehow reminded me of The Last Stand, the third X-Men movie.
It's funny you say that, because I get that vibe too.
Nice.
I get like X-Men The Last Stand vibe, and I'm like, it's making me very nervous.
Yes.
Because it's got so much going on in that trailer. It's like there's so many characters. But it doesn't feel like it's got a cohesive story. Like at least Days of Future Past, which had so many characters, it made sense. This one just feels like they just threw a whole bunch of stuff in. And I'm afraid they're going to waste a whole lot of stuff. Just like The Last Stand did.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm afraid they might do that. But it's the guy who directed the first two movies, Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hope he brings, you know, he just cut the trailer for the spectacle, and we get the story when we actually watch the movie.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've got hope that maybe Bryan Singer is like, he knows what he's doing. X-Men, the first one was all right, but the second one was, I think, between the second one and Days of Future Past, it's kind of tied for my favorites, but I still kind of like the second one better, X2.
Yeah.
But Bryan Singer definitely gets the X-Men. He knows how to use them. And like what we saw in Days of Future Past with the team working together as a team, playing off their powers, especially in those future sequences.
Yeah.
That was great. I mean, that's what the X-Men are. You know, when we read the comics, that's why we read the X-Men comics.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, we start to see the progression towards that. So going from like the... Although even now we're going to have a team that's kind of like a new batch of students, but hopefully we'll see them working together as a team and having a cohesive story and a cohesive quest that they're going on, rather than just a random assortment of battles, you know, which is what X3 was, with a whole bunch of wasted storylines. Like they just wasted the Phoenix, you know, in X3.
Yeah, but then X3 was a stunt to keep the franchise in Fox's trenches, so to say.
In Fox's clutches.
Clutches. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Brett Ratner. Oh, dear. He's just, not the most inspired choice, I think.
No.
Which is why, you know, Bryan Singer at least can give us, you know, he's proven that he can give us what we want out of the X-Men. So let's just hope he can bring that again for this one. But yeah, I mean, it looks good. There's some parts of it that just don't make sense. Like, I don't know what's happening with the bridges, and there's like buildings and cars being atomized in the trailer. Like,
yeah.
Is that Apocalypse? Is that Jean going Phoenix again? You know, we don't know. So that's exciting to sort of to think about and hope they don't mess everything up like they did last time.
I guess they won't, because you know, Inhumans has been slated back or will be cancelled, the Inhumans movie.
And they're going to cancel it? Or do they just push it back? I thought they just pushed it back.
It's pushed back, but Bleeding Cool wrote something about this being the first move to push it off the release slate. Roster.
Right.
So perhaps Marvel goes shopping for the X-Men.
You think they're just leaving the door open? They're saying, you know what? We're just gonna leave this slot here. And if Fox messes up and we get it back, then we get to reboot everything. It'll be interesting. I mean, because they haven't really doubled down on the Inhumans, have they? It's only in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
At the moment, it's not really in the movies.
No. Well, not from my point, not from my knowledge.
Yeah, I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. lately, like the last season. There's just too much on TV to watch, so I haven't really gone back to it. But I've heard it. It's not bad, so I'll have to put it on my list.
Oh, okay. Because my brother told me yesterday about it, and mm-hmm. he said he wanted to watch like a marathon on a German TV channel, and he only managed to watch half an hour of it before going to bed.
Really? He gave up?
He gave up.
Right. So not that exciting then.
Well, he doesn't have our acquired taste.
Right. Actually, your brother ends up watching and telling you about a lot of geek stuff.
Yeah,
so it sounds like he does, but you're saying that he doesn't.
You know, we had another discussion about Days of Future Past and Days of Future. We mentioned the movie earlier, the Brad Ratner movie, Last Stand. And he's a Last Stand apologist. He sees some good in that movie, yeah.
Oh, there is no good in that movie. The only part of that movie, and I don't know why we're talking about The Last Stand so much this time, because we should be talking about Apocalypse, but the only part of The Last Stand that I really like is it's just that scene with Angel in the bathroom when he's a kid beginning. Trying to cut off his wings.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the only scene that is, like, scene, to me, memorable and resonant. You know, I think the rest of the movie is crap.
De-aged Captain Picard is awesome.
De-aged Captain Picard?
Yeah, at the end when he steps off the plane.
Those parts, like, because that's the one where him and Magneto also go back to sort of pick up Jean Grey at her house, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that was a bad choice of words. But where they go to get Jean Grey at her house and she's using her powers. Because they're de-aged in that sequence too. And it just makes me feel a little bit iffy. Like, it looks, it's got a level of fakeness that to me is a little bit grotesque. Like, it's real, but it's fake. And it just makes me feel odd.
I would have wanted Jean to touch Professor X's face in that scene. I mean, it was CGI'd, but it looked so rubbery, and I just wanted somebody to touch him. Feel around with his face.
Make it real. Yeah. All right, cool. So, all right, so let's just go down the list before we completely do an X3 review in this episode. So, Apocalypse. What do you think of Apocalypse?
He looks serviceable. He still looks like an action figure, but there's the scene in the trailer where he grows and pushes Professor X down with his hand and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think in motion, the whole suit and the CGI will work out.
Yeah. I think for me, the action figure thing does ring true. When I think about Apocalypse from the comics, you know, he's monstrous.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a Darkseid meets Thanos type figure. You know, it's like it's humanoid but not really human, like he's evolved or whatever past being human.
Yeah.
And his proportions are like more kind of, it's somewhere between like monster more than human, And in the way they've designed the character here, he kind of looks like a human dressed up as a god, you know? And
yeah,
they didn't go far enough for me. I think they should have really taken his monstrosity to its appropriate level, you know? Cause he does look kind of like a toy figure. He looks kind of fake, which I'm not fussed about, but hopefully they can kind of make that look a lot better with the effects and the lighting and stuff in post-production compared to what we've seen in the trailers.
Yeah, I think they will. It's the same with Spider-Man's outfit from Civil War, what you have from the whole previous screenings. People say the costume in the film looks much more wholesome, better made, right. Better lit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, hopefully they can get to that. I like Apocalypse as a bad guy. I mean, I grew up reading X-Men, right? So that has a place close to my heart. And Apocalypse, like the Age of Apocalypse, the actual crossover that they had in the 90s is still one of my favorite ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to this one. And the fact that he grows and stuff, like obviously there's a lot more to come in terms of what he is and what his power set is and stuff. So very exciting. What about Psylocke? So the first incarnation of Psylocke in real life.
I'm not sure. I mean, I never gave too much thoughts about sure. Psylocke. I mean, I obviously thought about her like we all did, because of the costume and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think there was never really anything interesting done with her character. From the brief period in which I read X-Men, I heard that Matt Fraction gave her a second personality or something like that. But I never read, I only read the Civil War stuff from his run on X-Men.
Right.
And I think I lost you on Skype.
Really? I can still hear you. Your sound is kind of dying out.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you again, yes. And now I can see you again.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I don't know what's happening. Again, technology is trying to defeat us this week.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just keep going and see what happens.
See what happens, yeah. Life progress.
Yeah, because the recording's still going, so it should be all right.
Ah, nice.
So Psylocke, yeah, the costume design, I mean, compared to all the other characters, it's the most comic book authentic costume design for the movie. I think she doesn't look that bad.
No, absolutely.
Personally. But a lot of people are hating on Psylocke and the casting and stuff. I mean, maybe they could have gone with a more authentic, like an actual Asian actress. But I mean, from a looks point of view, it doesn't look that bad. Whether they could have done better casting, it's open. But you know, I at least it doesn't suck to me. So, and like, it's pretty bad when it's like, yeah, at least it doesn't suck. But that's kind of where that's at. I don't know how they're going to use her effectively. Because you're right, I don't know what her key storylines are. I know that she's, like, because the character was kind of...
I'm so sorry, I have to interrupt you. You just dropped out of the recording.
What? How could I be dropping out? It's my recording.
You're hosting the damn thing. How could you be dropped out?
It's still recording on my side.
Okay.
Like, you can see, like, my name is not in the box.
Yeah. I don't see your box anymore. Just see mine with recording in progress.
Okay, I see both.
Okay.
I see both, so I don't know what that means.
I guess if you see both, it should be all right.
Okay. Let's just keep going.
Okay. I'm so sorry for interrupting you.
No, that's fine. We're gonna have to somehow cut all of these bits out, and we're like, wait, are we recording? What's going on?
Okay,
and cut, so we can start again. So Psylocke, what was I saying?
Doesn't suck. Yeah.
It doesn't slack. I don't know what her key storylines are. With the whole, it's Betsy Bedrock, right? I know it's like one person who possessed another person's body and that whole thing.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether they even go to that level of detail to explain who and what she is. Her powers do look interesting, though. I don't know how she was slicing that car apart in the trailer, because she's got the side blade on one hand and she's got a real sword on the other hand. Very cool look and feel. Like, I love the way it came across, but it also looked a little bit fake. So I guess we're just going to have to see how she goes.
Hey, Betsy Braddock. She's the sister of Captain Britain.
Yes, I believe so. So I think, but again, I think that's her inside personality. Because she was the one character who kind of possessed the body of another character. So that's how she's got kind of the dual thing. And that might have been the kind of the internal voice thing that you're talking about, was where the other personality, the other person was coming out.
Possesses.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see. Jean Grey. So Jean Grey is going to be Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, which isn't the best casting choice.
Yeah. I'm not sure about her either. Like, I'm only seeing Sansa Stark because I've typecast her in my mind as Sansa Stark, and Jean Grey is not Sansa Stark. So I need to, you know, it'll be good to see what kind of range and how she can pull off such a different character. Yeah. Because that dream sequence in the trailer where she wakes up and she's all like, oh, I've had a nightmare, that felt very Sansa Stark to me. It felt very whiny. And, I mean, Jean Grey is an interesting character because she's a bit, off the rails sometimes. It'll be interesting to see how they play her out. I would hope she doesn't do Phoenix in this movie, because this movie is already going to have Apocalypse. I don't want to have
I hope so too.
Another wasted Phoenix storyline.
Yeah. And the Hellfire Club and stuff. We don't need them here.
Yeah. No. I mean, because they already kind of set up the Hellfire Club in the first kind of reboot in the 1960s one. What was that called?
Cuba Vacation or something like that.
Yeah.
X-Men Take Cuba.
Yeah, that one. Because that was the Hellfire Club.
First class.
Yeah, they didn't call it the Hellfire Club in that movie, did they? They just kind of had some of the people there, but wasn't really an official Hellfire Club.
No, they said Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost, I think.
Yeah, because they're effectively, you know, they were the king and queen of the Hellfire Club, weren't they? At various points in time. I would want them to just keep it simple, have Apocalypse as your very clear bad guy, and have the team. So, you know, obviously he kind of takes people to become horsemen and stuff. And it looks like Mystique is leading the team this time around. Yeah. So she's trying to get the band together in the absence of Xavier. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Magneto looks like he's one of the horsemen.
Yeah.
So very cool. Very cool. Lots of exciting potential. Let's just hope they can pull it all off. Then we've got Angel. Angel looks good, I think. Yes. Those metal wings. I hope they... I can't remember in the trailer. There was one sequence where he's in a cage match with Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
And they were fighting, and he had feather wings. Were they actual feathers?
I think they were feather wings.
Because later on, he's got metal wings.
Yeah.
Because that's like one of those. Angel is a character, I don't know, for some reason, he's a pretty boring character, but he's got the best, I think, emotional beats. because he's the one, like in the comics, where they actually rip off his wings, forcibly, when he goes into the Morlock tunnel. So they probably won't do the Morlock sequence. And when he's, like, pinned to the wall and stuff, like, very, very cool visuals. And then Apocalypse replaces his wings with the metal ones. I don't know how they're going to do that transformation in the movie, but hopefully it's as... Because it's a pretty... it's pretty graphic and horrible sequence of events that happens to the poor guy. And I want to see that done in the movie, you know?
Yeah, but he needs that traumatic experience because even as an X-Man, he's always striving hard to be normal, like Rogue, in a way. And the whole Archangel thing and him joining X-Force later, much, much later, I think, in the Remender run.
Right.
It makes the character feel very wholesome because he gave, as Archangel, he gave into his superhero personality so much that he becomes an enforcer for mutant kind, one of their secret protectors. And I wonder if they replicate that in the movie somehow afterwards, because they obviously
right.
gonna beat Apocalypse. But how will they deal with the Horsemen? Or how will the Horsemen deal with their fate?
How will the Horsemen come back, right?
Yeah.
From being Horsemen and having done all those things. Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's in the Brian Michael Bendis one where he brought the original five into the future to confront their future selves. And like, you know, Scott finds out that, you know, what he did. Try not to give away any spoilers. But, you know, they all kind of find out what their future selves become, and, like, Iceman's kind of, like, you know, he's pretty chuffed from memory. But nobody wants to tell Archangel, like, nobody wants to tell Angel, or nobody wants to tell Warren what happened to him. And he's like, why won't anyone tell me what happened? That's pretty funny. It was pretty funny and pretty cool as well. I mean,
yeah.
It was done well. So, interesting, like, I'm quite excited to see how they pull off Archangel. Nightcrawler looks interesting as well. He's going to be a fellow Australian, so I'm very excited over that to see how
Nightcrawler
he does that.
Nightcrawler is always great. The best X-Men character.
That sequence in X2 with the attempted assassination of the president.
It's great.
Brilliant. Like one of the coolest action sequences ever. So hopefully they can give this, you know, he'll be a younger version of Nightcrawler, but hopefully they can give him something as cool. And there's that scene in the trailer as well with Quicksilver running through the building as it's about to explode. And he's trying to save people. That looks cool as well. So, you know, that's a great use of his powers.
Yeah.
That's a great demonstration of his powers. Go on.
It's a great version of Quicksilver because he likes Pink Floyd and Rush. It's just awesome.
Yeah, Dark Side of the Moon t-shirt. The X-Men version of Quicksilver is much cooler, I think, than the Avengers version. The Avengers version felt very flat. He didn't really have any super cool sequences or anything to really highlight who he was.
Yeah.
And even how they killed him in the Age of Ultron, I really didn't feel it. Like, it wasn't an Agent Coulson level event, you know, with him dying, just because we didn't really know all that much about him. And we didn't have anything to latch onto to say that guy was cool. You know, I'm sad that he's gone.
No, that was a big problem with him.
Yeah. All right, so back to Age of Apocalypse. Storm.
She wasn't in the trailer much. Is she going to be a horseman? I got the impression that she's not as clear-cut as we know her.
Yeah, she is going to be a horseman. I think in the write-ups, they said that Apocalypse discovers her on the streets of Cairo, and she becomes allied to him. So whether she's an official horseman or just working with him, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to get Mohawk Storm. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome. And I always forget that the movie is a young version of those characters, and not we don't get the established versions. I always forget that.
Well, the Halle Berry Storm was a very disappointing overall. I mean, in her use of her powers, she was disappointing, and also in the execution of the character, she was disappointing. Storm is like a goddess, you know. She's like a super. I mean, I don't think she's officially Omega level because she can't like fully transmute matter or whatever. But she's up there. Like she's super powerful. They just never used her to that level in the movie so far. She had that immortal line, though. She can electrify a toad. So it's pretty much the only memorable thing about Storm. I heard that line was cut into a song, into a rap song, I believe. Where she's like, yeah, they actually had the line from X-Men 1 where she's like, do you know what happens to a toad when it gets struck by lightning? It's like the same thing that happens to everything else. What a stupid line. All right. And then our friend Havok. So I don't know who wrote this question on the list. But there's only one shot of Havok in the trailer, and it's quite early on, it looks like, in the story of the movie, and then we never see him again. So I don't know what that means.
Well, he's Scott's brother. Perhaps Scott needs a bit of motivation.
Maybe. I mean, does he know? That'll be interesting to see, first of all, if they play out the brothers thing.
Yeah.
Because Havok's supposed to be the younger brother, but in the movie, Scott will be younger than Havok.
Yeah.
Right? Also, they don't look anything alike, which was an odd choice of casting, but it could also be that there's only room for one Summer's brother in this in the story. So we can either only have one at a time. So, yeah, I don't know what's happening. I like Havok, the character, like even from First Class. I thought he was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I like the way they used his powers and stuff like that. Like even the, I can't remember what they called it. With Banshee flying, holding,
the harness.
I don't think they called it a speedball, but anyway, it was some maneuver which effectively in the comics, I think Angel and Scott did that, right? So Angel flying, holding Scott as he fired. It'll be cool. Like that'll be a passing on to the next generation kind of thing, but. Yeah, it'll be cool to see Havok come in again. Cool. So overall, what's your excitement level for Age of Apocalypse?
I'm excited, but I'm not overly excited.
The fact that you have to think about it is like, it's I could go either way.
But I'm feeling positive about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a good feeling. I think it will. I think the trailer is cut for excitement, and we will get a bit more out of the final product.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So hopefully it's going to all be one consistent story, like we said before, and they can give us something that's even better than Days of Future Past, which is already pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's cool. So. We do want to go through the rest of the trailers that we had on the list just quickly so we can get them out of the way. So Suicide Squad. So we had a very interesting set of trailers from Suicide Squad. They were pretty good. They showed a lot more humor and promise compared to what we saw from Batman v Superman, which we'll get to later.
But
are you excited for Suicide Squad?
Not really.
Yeah. It's on your... meh list.
Yeah, I've watched the first trailer, and Batman vs. Superman was tonally a Suicide Squad movie already. Don't know how you can talk this.
Yeah. All right. I'm excited for Harley Quinn. I'm excited to see how they do it. It looks like it's going to be quite interesting to watch. So, I'm like, I'm going to watch it, but probably on the second weekend, probably during a midday screening. I'm not going to rush out like for Captain America Civil War, which I've already got my tickets for. So, and I'm going to be seeing it twice in like 2 days because, work is, part of the merchandising sponsorship Captain America. So we've got a work screening, effectively, which I'm going to on the Thursday, which is opening day. And then on Friday night, I'm going with my friends. So that should be fun.
Nice. That's cool.
So,
oh, man. I
get perks. Yeah, I'm so excited. Like when they sent out, I was on vacation when they sent out the email to say, do you want to go? And I was like, yes. And then everyone's like, stop replying to emails on vacation. I'm like, this is important. I need to reply. Make sure my seat's secure. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, so I'm excited over that. That's like, you know, we don't actually have Civil War on the list, but I'm like ramped up. I'm ready. Let's just go. Stopped watching trailers. I've stopped watching all the interviews and all the press because I just want to experience it.
Want to see the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So, staying on Marvel. I mean, do we want to say anything else about Suicide Squad then? So there's reshoots that are done.
Yeah.
Or they're doing reshoots.
All the humor that you were mentioning that could be in the movie was already in the trailer. And with the critique that Batman vs. Superman was already so dark, they went back and reshoot parts of Suicide Squad to inject a bit more humor.
Are you serious? Is that like so that's a combination of the Deadpool effect and the fact that Batman v Superman was so took itself so seriously.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah. But, look, I mean, a lot of people who go in talking to people who've seen Batman v Superman, one of the chief complaints for why they didn't like it was because the lack of humor. And I think Marvel has so established the brand of what a superhero movie should be is that that's what people expect now. To the point where even with Marvel movies, they're becoming darker and darker as well.
As well, yeah.
You know? And so there's not as much humor as the earlier ones, which is interesting because people are still expecting, and that's why they don't like a lot of the later movies, just because it's not as funny and not as jokey and light as the previous ones.
That's in the beginning, yeah.
So, interesting. But, you know, the stories have to evolve, and you can't have a civil war and be making jokes everywhere. So that's going to be interesting to see as well. And I think some of the reviews talked about that as well. So the press screenings for Civil War have already happened, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of the reviewers are talking about how this is the most serious and I can't remember the word they used, but they said this version of Tony Stark is the most serious one so far.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because that's the progression of the character over time. I mean, he has to change over time as well.
Yeah,
which is what makes the whole thing interesting.
Especially after Age of Ultron. Because that happened on his watch.
Quite literally, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, and then so like, you know, you had Iron Man 3 where he was traumatized from the Avengers movie.
Yeah.
And then Age of Ultron happened, and now, you know, now he's trying to fight. It's almost like he's the one trying to bring back, like he's gone the other way to try to bring back order by supporting the superhero. I don't know if they're calling it superhero registration, but supporting the Sokovia Accords,
correct, right? Yeah.
Which is what Captain America doesn't stand for. So, you know, he's becoming quite a serious character. Or he's becoming quite serious as a character.
Yeah, and it fits so great in his characterization because he's somebody who projects himself onto the world. And there's this internal conflict because he messed up and now he's trying to solve... He solves this conflict externally, so to say, while Captain America solves it internally and says, okay, we messed up. We have to try harder the next time and not, ooh, I have to get under some supervision.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about it that way, but that's really, that's a really good way to look at it. Captain America is like, well, we have to be better. And Tony Stark's like, well, you know, I wouldn't have done it if somebody told me not to, kind of. Well, actually, many people told him not to. But now he's trying to enforce an external structure almost to keep himself and everyone else in check, you know?
He wants build an armor around himself.
Ooh, build an armor around himself and an armor around the armor around the world.
Around the world.
Very good psychological analysis. Yeah. I like it.
Years of therapy will do that to you.
Yes, I am trained in the ways of this analysis. Well, you are Austrian, you know, maybe it's part of the
Freudian
culture.
The Freudian genes.
All right, cool. So I mean, Suicide Squad, take it or leave it, sounds like, at this point.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I won't watch it. When we talk about it, I want to make my review based on your perception of it.
I like it. You're not going to watch it, but you're going to review it based on what I say.
Yeah.
And the analysis of so, right?
Yeah.
Right. Nice.
Because I trust, in that case, I trust you more than I trust myself when I watch this movie. Too much baggage with this movie.
You're going to go in with a lot of bias, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to Doctor Strange then. So Doctor Strange teaser trailer came out. That was Doctor Strange out-Nolaning Nolan, you know? That was great. It was like Inception meets Batman Begins meets Inception again. Yep. It was a Marvel movie inside a Christopher Nolan movie inside a Marvel movie.
Marvel movie, yeah. But it was awesome.
they went pretty deep. It looks cool. It looks like they're ripping off a lot of Nolan-y things that we've kind of seen before.
Yeah.
But what I like about that is that they're taking it to the next level. So they're not just, like, for example, they're not just folding over the city. There's a fight sequence, it looks like, that's going to happen inside that folding over of the city. If you looked at the trailer, there was like two figures. It looked like they were fighting or falling between the two versions of the city or whatever that was. That looks cool. And I'm just imagining like a magic fight sequence inside a city that's multidimensional. Like that would – it. I mean, I can imagine it in my head. I want to see it actually played out.
Yeah. I guess we will get – we will get something like that in this movie.
Yeah. Some of the kaleidoscopic stuff was interesting. So I'd like to see how they pull that off as well. You know, every time he kind of shifts into the spirit world or wherever he goes. Is it called the spirit world in Doctor Strange? Do you know? I can't remember what it's called.
I can't remember it too.
Yeah, that magic plane effectively is where he does a lot of his stuff. That was pretty cool. I loved how the is it the ancient one?
Yes.
The spirit, the teacher person that he has, she kind of punches him out of his body. That was pretty cool.
That was cool. You know, a buddy at work who never watches superhero movies watched the trailer and he came in and said, "Oh man, the trailer was so awesome. She punches him so hard that his astral body falls out of his ass." Or he shits out his astral body or something like that.
That's a translation from the German, is it?
Er hat seinen Astralkörper ausgeschissen, was the original thing, which means he shat out his astral body.
Nice. That's pretty much what happened. Yeah. No, that was cool. It looks like there's some good surprises in store. I hope they don't reveal too much of the visual surprises that they have, because we want to be wowed, you know. And just like the way Nolan kind of holds back a lot of what's going to happen and be shown in the movie, I think for Doctor Strange, they should take it to that next level, but kind of save it for the movie. And so you see it for the first time and you really get that wow factor. If they give it away in the trailer, it'll be like, meh, seen that, you know, which is kind of like the Deadpool movie, because they sort of gave away so much of that really awesome fight sequence in the trailer. And then when you watch the movie, it kind of felt flat a little bit from an action point of view. But Doctor Strange, I mean, a lot of potential there. I think he looks – the translation from page to screen is pretty good.
He looks good.
He looks like an adventurer. Skeptical. Yeah, like an astral projection adventurer through space and time. So that's going to be pretty funky. And I want to see how they roll up magic into the overall Marvel universe as well. So that's going to be pretty cool.
They'll find a way. They have to ramp up.
So the overall approach they're going with is that, like, I think Thor explained it in the Thor movie, right? He said magic is just technology and science that's more advanced than we kind of can comprehend.
Yeah.
So it'll be cool, or it'll be interesting to see how they sort of rationalize that with the rest of the science and technology, because it's been very sciencey so far, you know, with Hulk and Iron Man. Even the creation of Captain America, like everything. Aside from the twins, so Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
They haven't explained them yet.
Yeah, they haven't fully explained where she comes from. But I think their power set will be rooted in some sort of magic, and that magic will be explainable through super advanced technology. Like, I'm sure they're going to have Bruce Banner's not going to be there, I don't believe. But they'll have Tony Stark explain some sort of exotic particle that, you know, they can explain magic with or something.
Well,
like
they have pimp particles. Perhaps they can do something with that. The Douglas particle.
Yeah, the Michael Douglas particle.
I like
the Douglas particle. Sounds cool, actually. It sounds like something that could be real. It sounds like, you know, the Higgs boson or something.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. And then, so we're quite excited about Doctor Strange. And then staying in the Disney camp, Rogue One.
Awesome. It's
awesome.
It's
in a word, that was the first time you didn't hesitate when you said something.
Awesome. You know, that scene at the end of the trailer where they run out and the AT-ATs are firing at them and they just run around their feet. It looks awesome because that's a suicide mission. And we haven't seen something like that in Star Wars. We read about it. And we've seen it in the Clone Wars, but now we've seen it in live action with new characters.
So it's actually going to be Rogue One, : Suicide Squad.
The funny bits.
Yeah. I think it looks awesome. Did you see Stephen Colbert's review of the Rogue One trailer?
No.
From the Late Show. It's worth watching. So, like, if you can... I'm not going to try to do it because it's going to ruin the whole thing, but Google it after this and just look up Stephen Colbert's Rogue One review or Rogue One reaction to the trailer. Yeah. Really cool. Really cool. But yeah, I mean, one of the things he says, this is like, we got everything Star Wars that we wanted. The only thing that was missing, though, was a good lightsaber fight. So they had the one random Asian dude, like the only, it's looked like the only actual Chinese guy in the galaxy, you know, like he was a little bit too Chinese, you know, like with his dress and the martial arts, it felt not Star Wars-y. It felt a little bit too, it felt too Earth, you know?
Yeah.
I think if they're going to have these kind of exotic alien cultures and stuff, they could mix that up a little bit, not have it so clearly an Earth-based Chinese or Asian type thing. But aside from that, which felt a little bit out of place, the rest of it was brilliant, I thought.
Yeah, but then, you know, the movie centers on the Empire and they're pretty xenophobic in their approach to the people they employ. So that kind of excuses to bring an Asian guy in the mix. But his getup and the martial arts are a bit over the hitting it on the head. I agree with you
there. I don't mind that he's like, so I'm not saying like from a racial point of view that he shouldn't have been Chinese. I'm saying he shouldn't have been like an Earth, like clearly someone who stepped out of 15th century China.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because that didn't feel Star Wars. That felt like it was kind of like, you know, it would made more sense in Game of Thrones if he showed up there.
Yeah.
Because then you could say, well, it's an Earth-based historical story, you know? Whereas this is a galactic-based story.
Oh, yeah.
So they really, you know, if they had an alien doing Chinese wushu, that would have made more sense to me.
Than
an actual human, you know? So that's the only thing that kind of felt a bit weird.
Yeah.
But what will be cool is if they can make it like, and I don't know, because this is what kind of more of a Battlestar Galactica thing, where all the Battlestar characters and all of the Battlestar cultural references are proto-Earth references. Because it's, you know, Battlestar happens, you know, before, like, you know, before Earth's history, I guess you can say. And so a lot of the Battlestar characters' cultures then get seeded into Earth's culture, and that's what creates our cultures to a point. And that's what's cool about Battlestar, you know? So I don't know if Star Wars is not going in that direction. They're not trying to say that, you know, this happened in a galaxy far, far away, and then those characters from that galaxy came to our galaxy and created or seeded some of Earth's cultures.
Sure, yeah.
Because that would be, you know, that's not a Star Wars thing. Star Wars kind of stays separate from Earth, right?
Strange.
So, so it's just weird seeing that, which I thought was a bit odd. But otherwise, I mean, it looked cool. And it felt like they were saying, well, we don't have lightsabers, so we just need to have a cool action sequence here. Let's put a martial arts guy in. And they did, It'll be better if he wasn't wearing, so either if they made him an alien wearing Chinese type outfits and fighting, or if he was a human not wearing a Chinese outfit and fighting. You know, like it was too much Earth in one character.
Yeah, I totally get that.
So anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see how they pull it off and how they explain that one. Maybe he's like, maybe they do just pick him up on Earth. You know, it's like a random Earth guy.
That would be really strange. Around. I come from a blue planet far, far away. Yeah.
Yes, we haven't discovered electricity yet, but let me fly the starship. So one of the big things about the Rogue One trailer that everyone was talking about was the main character being a Mary Sue. Did you get that impression?
No, but we had the same discussion with Rey in The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't care anymore. I watched Tango and Cash on the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, nobody second guessed those guys.
Yeah. I think when it's for most of the 80s, right, yeah, and leading into the 90s, the action era heroes could really do no wrong. They could do everything, you know? And I think that's kind of the vein of the Star Wars characters as well. Even when they get things wrong, they still get it right.
Yeah.
And I think people are potentially, you know, it's that whole Tumblr thing again. People are just so sensitive to it and reacting to it. And it could be potentially around, you know, playing with these stereotypes, but doing it in a way that brings more diversity, whether it's through gender diversity or even racial diversity, that people are kind of like noticing it for the first time. Because if you just saw it, if it was just another white guy who was in that role, nobody would double think about it. But now that, you know, now that it's a girl, they're like, hey, girls can't do that, you know, that sort of thing. So it's an interesting one. At the end of the day, I don't really care. As long as the story is good and we just have a lot of fun in watching the movie.
Exactly.
And it looks like it is going to be fun, so.
Yeah, it'll definitely be very interesting to watch a Star Wars movie outside of canon, so to say, to see an expanded universe book played out in the cinema.
Yeah. That will be fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that. I don't know, like, the history of the... Like, and what makes it exciting, though, is that you kind of know with the main core characters from, like, episodes, you know, 7, 8, 9, that they're going to be sticking around for the most part.
Yeah.
Whereas with these characters, and it being that suicide run, you don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be, like, you don't know who's going to die randomly.
Yeah.
You know? So that does make it exciting as well, just to see how they pull it off and what they do.
Yeah, and Disney isn't taking chances because I think Rogue One is somehow going to be intertwined with the Rebels TV show. And the end of the second season in Rebels was, at least for me, a game changer because they really messed those characters up.
Ooh, okay. No spoilers because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was great. Awesome.
So I tried to load it up on my iPad, but I couldn't watch it on the plane because the files just wouldn't work. So I need to find time to sit down and actually sit down and watch them. So I'm very excited though. Very excited. Star Wars Rebels. The first season was awesome. So I'm looking forward to catching up on the second season. All right. So Rogue One, very excited. I think that's the highest excitement level we've had out of any of the trailers that came out so far. Is there any other trailers that we're missing from this list?
No. No, we've worked it off.
Yeah. So just some random ones, like I've heard The Jungle Book is supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
I want to watch that.
But not for children.
It's not good for children?
Yeah, it's very dark. Very violent from what I've heard.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so it's going to leave children traumatized, is it? Yeah, I've heard it's executed really well. So, and the 3D is supposed to be really good too. The trailers looked a bit odd, like the talking animals. The lip sync was just looked slightly off in the trailers.
Yeah.
But it sounds like nobody's complaining about that now. So maybe like by the time they actually got the movie out there, it works. So
it works. Yeah. And the trailers, they felt very strange. But it could be because when I saw the Jungle Book trailer in the cinema for the first time, I saw the BFG trailer beforehand.
And right.
That one plays with perspective and size. And mm-hmm. compared to that shorter trailer, the Jungle Book felt very unspectacular.
Right.
Although it had those great sequences where the camera pans through the jungle behind Mowgli. Yeah.
Okay.
Felt a bit like a letdown. But now that everybody who I know who saw it are very positive about the movie.
Okay, so you haven't seen it yourself, right?
No, I haven't seen it myself yet.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, so we can close that one off probably the next time. Hopefully we both have seen it by then.
Yeah.
I was going to go on to Batman v Superman, but there was something else I wanted to say as well, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, well, let it go. Batman v Superman. Let's discuss this one.
Let's discuss it, yeah.
The elephant in the room. Who wants to go first?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
All right, first of all, how many stars would you give it out of five?
Out of five?
Yeah.
2.5 because it looks pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a purely technical standpoint, it's well made. But the actual story and the performances aren't on par with the guys who handle the cameras and sounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, 2.5.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd give it 3. But every time I think about it, it goes down. It goes down in terms of half a star. So I might end up meeting you at 2.5. I saw it twice, actually. The second time was a lot better than the first time. The first time I just remember feeling very disappointed at everything that happened. Yep. There were some moments of awesome. There were some moments that were really good in the movie, but those moments were very few and far between. It took a long time to get to the actual battle between Batman and Superman. And that would have been okay if the reasons that Batman and Superman were fighting made sense. So if they spent all that time setting up the reasoning for why Batman really didn't like Superman, right? And it was hilarious because when I walked out of the movie the first time with my friends, one of them turned around as we were walking out of the door and she said, "So, why did Batman want to kill Superman?" And like nobody could really answer the question properly, you know. one of the ushers standing at the door, waiting to go in and clean up the thing, turned around and said, "Because he reckless." I thought that's probably the best answer. The only reason Batman wanted to kill Superman was because he was reckless. Because, you know, like it didn't make any sense. And then. So, spoilers now, because it's like, what, several weeks after the movie came out.
6 weeks or
but
something.
But the reasons why they stopped fighting was also so stupid. Like, really? That's all it took for you guys to reconcile and now become best buddies to the point where you can tell his mother, "I'm with Clark"? You know, like, oh, it just was frustrating.
Yeah.
It was frustrating.
Yeah.
The characters rang so untrue, I think, from what I was expecting for a Batman Superman movie. We haven't discussed this before, have we? Like, this is the first time that you
this is the first
talking.
Time, okay. Yeah.
Because Batman, like, Lex Luthor was the smartest person in the room. He was the most psychotic person in the room, but he was also the smartest person in this movie because he ends up orchestrating the whole thing, including laying all the seeds for Bruce Wayne to follow.
Yeah.
And Bruce Wayne just followed them and isn't wasn't the best detective in the world to figure out that Lex was orchestrating all of this from the background. You know what I mean? Like, Batman, because this was a mature Batman, Batman should have been the one that saw through what Lex was doing. Instead, he just followed what Lex wanted him to do.
To do, yeah.
Which was stupid. Like, Batman, that's not Batman, you know?
Yeah.
That annoyed me, because Batman should have known better.
I had one hope throughout the whole movie, that Lex Luthor somehow joins the fight between them. And at a certain point, where he monologues some important information, Batman and Superman turn around, say, hey, it's good that you mentioned that, because we waited the whole time for you to just say that, and now we'll take you down.
that would have been a better way to end it. That would have been like a Kaiser Soze type of switch. Yeah. That would have been cool. if they'd actually known the whole time, and they just needed to play into Lex's plan for a while until they could get him, and then they can just get him. You know? Yeah. That's pretty cool. See, that made hairs rise in the back of my neck. That was so good. But unfortunately, we only had Martha, which was the one very flimsy. Yeah. It was a flimsy reason that they were fighting in the first place, and it was a flimsy reason for them to get back together. Like, it didn't make any sense. Didn't make any sense at all. It's just stupid. Just stupid.
Yeah, it was a flimsy reason to take some snuff photographs of Diane Lane, but Martha Kent.
Yeah. I know. So in terms of looks and feels, right, there were moments in there with, the destruction of Metropolis during the Superman Zod fight.
Which is a wonderful sequence.
Bruce Wayne. That was a great sequence. Yep. Bruce Wayne running into the ash cloud while everyone's running out. It looked really great. They just didn't amount to anything at the end.
Yeah, and you had the one guy in Wayne Towers that gets the phone call from Bruce. You have to get out of the building. Why? What's happening? And he turns around and the building's falling.
No, but that's the thing. It's like he was watching this fight from inside the building. Then he gets the call from Bruce Wayne. And then he's like, oh yeah, it would be pretty good for us to evacuate, wouldn't it? Like, oh, dude, why wait for a phone call for, Not the most switched on leader guy was, let me tell you.
It was so great.
And I was confused. Like, I thought Bruce Wayne was shouting dad as he was running up to the building. I didn't realize the guy's name was Dan or something.
I thought so too.
DC movies and sound, like, what is it with their sound production? You can hardly hear what people are saying half the time. What else? I mean, the best thing about the movie, though, was Wonder Woman, I thought. In the 5 minutes of screen time that she had, either as Wonder Woman or as Diana, she just drew all focus. Like, she really played it well. Like, I thought she was so cool.
Yeah.
In every scene she was in, she just stole that whole scene.
But then,
you know,
I'm so afraid that she was just awesome because she was in the movie for, 6 minutes.
Yeah. Well, that's a risk, isn't it? The risk is that because the rest of the movie was so kind of bland to watch, and she was like the one bright light in the scenes that she were in a movie where she's there for the whole movie, it'll just be bland again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it'll just even out, and she won't stand out as much because the rest, you know, it's going to be one whole movie of her, so.
Yeah.
But even, you know, the music, so the Wonder Woman theme that they put in, Hans Zimmer's Is She With You, which I've listened to like about 50 times already on Spotify. And the battle sequence that she had with Doomsday, it was just so cool.
Yeah.
And she got to use all her things. She used the shield, she used the sword, she used the rope, she used the
gauntlets.
Yeah. The bracelets, No, I think bracelets is correct, because gauntlets are actual gloves, right? Yeah. So the bracelets, look, she used it all. It was pretty cool. I really am really looking forward to the way she's going to do it in her movie. The only the problem is, like, her movie's going to be World War One, right? So that'll be interesting as well to see. Because here she was fighting a monster, so she could pretty much unleash. And she hadn't fought in so long that, you know, she does that kind of smile halfway through the battle sequence as well, which is like, I've missed this. So it'll be cool. I want to see how they do it in World War One and that whole story. So I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman movie. Can't come soon enough.
Next year, I guess, from what I heard.
Is it next year?
Yeah, they bumped it up.
Right, okay. They need to keep the excitement levels up with this whole franchise, I think, because people were all over the place. I think fans of Superman and Batman and fans of the comics seemed to like the movie a lot more, and I think that was because it had so much of inside references, like to the comics and stuff like that, whereas people who were coming in new, who'd only really watched or experienced these characters through the movies and TV shows, really didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, the lack of humor, the lack of color, they were left saying, you know, we want what the Avengers was. We don't want this. So.
Yeah, it's so joyless. And well, you know, the sequence in the, is it the Capitol?
The explosion.
Explosion, yeah. Because the guy in the wheelchair is called Wally. And I guess I wasn't alone with the assumption that he somehow ends up becoming the Flash through technology or what have you. They don't give him a second name, but you know, just Wally and the implication that has for DC Comics, and he has no legs. So part of me was wishing that somehow he ends up through Kryptonian or Motherbox technology becoming the Flash to tie the whole thing together, and then he just gets blown up.
Becoming, yeah, you. So you were expecting him to become Wally West at the end of the day. Yeah.
I mean, that sequence was a punch in the guts as well as in the genitals, because the whole speech about democracy and how we can solve problems with talking. And then, boom.
Meanwhile. I didn't see the bomb coming. I was quite surprised by that. So they got me. But a lot of people, as soon as Lex gives him the wheelchair, a lot of people were like, ooh, Lex doesn't do anything for charity, you know?
Yeah.
That was a surprise to me. I thought, like, from a character point of view, the setup of Superman, right? So he was just, what I didn't like about it as well was that he was just being pushed around the whole movie.
Yeah.
And he had that resting bitch face through the whole movie.
Through the whole movie, yeah.
Because he had no agency for what he was actually doing. Everyone kind of just pushed him around. Batman pushed him around. Lex Luthor pushed him around. You know, he didn't really make any decisions, I think, that actually changed anything at the end of the day, did he?
Yeah.
Maybe to go back and fight. I mean, he saves Lex when he stops Doomsday from punching him. But, I mean, that's just what Superman would do. He didn't really do anything that would affect the overall outcome of the story. He was just reacting to what the bad guys were doing.
Yeah.
So that was not a Superman kind of movie or a Superman kind of story in my mind, you know?
At the sequence... I'm sorry, the sequence on the roof with the flooded community where he just floats in the air.
Yeah.
Because they leave it completely open, he could just eradicate the whole village with his heat vision.
Yeah. Well,
it's just joyless. And
that sequence is shown when they were trying to explain how godlike he is. And I love, you know, the practicality of when he was doing that is kind of like, the village is flooded. The people are on their roofs holding out their hands to him. And he's just like, well, I could rescue you right now, but I'm just going to float here for a while so we can get this shot. You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like,
he could've...
it's almost like, but first let me take a selfie.
And it's okay to portray him in that way, but, you know, just show him descend onto the roof and, you know, perhaps nod to the people, at least give them a nod, acknowledge them in some way, you know, just give him a bit more, put a bit more Superman into Superman.
Yeah. So far, Henry Cavill Superman is very much, you know, he's a lost character. Yeah. Like, I would have liked, because he was lost at in Man of Steel, yeah, right? That's why he was like working on the fishing vessels and stuff like that. My hope was that after Zod, he got purpose and he found his place to a point.
Yeah.
And what I wanted out of this movie was that now that he's decided this is my place in the world, this is a test. So Batman v Superman was about testing his conviction.
Yeah.
In playing out that purpose that he's decided or set for himself. Whereas we still didn't find him with a purpose. We found him kind of lost. The only clear purpose that he had, which is what even alluded to when in the Flash sequence, when Flash comes through time to talk to Bruce, yeah, is to protect Lois. Like the only thing that Superman really stands for right now, because he can take and leave everything else, is that he wants to protect Lois. Which in itself, I mean, fair enough, but at the same time, you know, you're Superman. You're literally a god.
Yep.
Look a bit bigger, you know? So, I don't know. I think the characters were just pegged at the wrong level for me. You know, Batman was not the Batman that we know and love. He wasn't the, he had great action sequences, but that action sequence was also given away in the trailer. So again, I didn't see a Batman action sequence that left me wowed because yeah, I was wowed from the trailers. Batman wasn't the detective he should have been.
Yeah.
And Superman didn't really stand for anything. I mean, he didn't, you know, that half the point of Superman is that he's a beacon of light, right?
Yeah.
He's the symbol of hope because he's always going to do the right thing and do almost the impossible. Whereas here we just saw him reacting to everything the bad guys did and really didn't find a way out that would be the Superman way of solving the problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and even giving into, at the end when he confronts Batman and he just says, if I wanted you dead, you'd be dead already. Instead of, dude, take up my mom. Please help me.
Yeah.
You know, Martha.
Martha. Martha. Save Martha. Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know. I mean, that whole sequence, I was like, what? That's all you're going to have, you know?
Yeah, but
the first thing he should have, even when he landed, I don't even know. Like when he landed to fight Batman and he just said, Lex has my mom. You know?
Yeah.
I'm sure Bruce would have listened. And the reason, like even Bruce was like single, like almost sociopathically hellbent on taking down Superman.
Yeah.
With reasoning that almost didn't make any sense.
Sense, yeah.
I mean, Ben Affleck sold it. He played the part, I think, quite well, you know. That whole line is, if there's even 1% chance, we have to take it as an absolute certainty. You know, like yeah. Ben Affleck sold the argument, but the argument was stupid.
You know? Yeah.
Tried his best. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not really, well, the other part, you know, they showed kind of the start of the Justice League, right? Because they showed you all of the videos that Lex had gathered on these other people. None of them really looked super awesome to me. I think the Flash sequence was probably the best one because I think it's where it should have been, you know?
Yeah.
In terms of what they showed. The Aquaman one didn't look very... Like, Aquaman's supposed to... I mean, it's supposed to be... Well, they're trying to make him look badass and regal, right? So, because he's the king of Atlantis. But I didn't get that from what they showed.
No.
It just kind of looked like a random, like, dude diving, like free diving.
Yeah, somebody wanking underwater and gets caught by a science vessel doing so.
Yeah. Like, if you're Aquaman and this... Because a science vessel is the equivalent of something that's super loud and noisy and kind of bumbling its way down into the ocean depths.
Yeah.
You can see it. You can see it from miles. You can hear it from miles away, right? You should know it's there because you're Aquaman and you've got like sonar vision and like, you know, sonar sensors and stuff. He should have known what it was. He should have known that it's not a threat. So he doesn't have to come at it with his trident.
Yeah.
Right. Cause he looked like he was kind of like in a battle stance against what is the equivalent of like the Mars lander. Because you're like, this thing doesn't pose any threat to me. I'm bloody Aquaman, you know?
Yeah.
So,
just swim away.
That was a bit stupid. I thought the cyborg sequence was interesting with the mother box and stuff, but they didn't explain the mother box. If they'd shown Lex with the mother box, then we would have known what it was.
But apparently they released.
Yeah, I didn't see any of those things that they released.
Okay.
So go and explain it.
They released a cutscene where Lex is in the Kryptonian vessel that Superman had in Man of Steel, and I think it's Steppenwolf from the New Gods is standing next to him and is handing out mother boxes to Lex. And the SWAT.
Steppenwolf was handing out mother boxes.
Yeah. And a SWAT team is going in to arrest Lex. And they see Steppenwolf leaving, and the mother boxes go out into the world.
Right. But remember, that video of cyborging being created happens before all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where did that mother box come from?
Yeah.
But at the same time, why, you know. Because the whole thing, like, even at the end of the movie where Lex is all like, the bell has been rung and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and he's in the prison and he's saying, I don't know, ding, 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 whatever he's saying. It's because he knows about Darkseid and, like, he knows that's coming. He knows that's in play, right?
Yeah.
The rest of the audience has no idea. They're just seeing a crazy guy in jail, you know?
Yeah.
And that's part of why, you know, comic fans enjoyed it because they understood or they saw what was being alluded to there. But people who were not familiar with the material had no idea what the hell was going on. Like the movie just comes across as all kinds of crazy. Like nothing lines up and makes sense because people don't understand all the hidden dots that they've hidden through this narrative.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of making it fun for some people, but not everyone's invited to the party, you know, which is why it got the reviews that it did, I think.
Yeah, and Marvel had...
Aside from the fact of being humorless.
Yeah. And Marvel had a lot of movies to build up to the Avengers, and then to Age of Ultron, and then so on. And DC had three movies. No. The second movie, Man of Steel, is the first movie of this DC universe, cinematic universe, so to say. Yeah. So they had no time to explain anything.
It would have almost made, like, the two ideas that you came up with now. I think you should take over from David Goyer writing this. Having Batman and Superman pretend to play into Lex's plan and then switching it on him at the end once he reveals what they want him to reveal would have been awesome. And also, just having the Flash being introduced as Wally and then going in for some sort of experimental surgery with Luther Corp or something. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Or even with Star Labs, right? But just having that being played out as being the introduction of the Flash would have been awesome.
That would have been
And
amazing.
That's all they would have had to do. And then in subsequent movies, maybe in the Wonder Woman movie, they can somehow introduce Aquaman and Cyborg and the rest of it, you know, without having to force all of the stuff into the first... into this movie.
Because
this movie was like, had so much in it, and as a comic fan, you could get so much out of it, but if you're watching it, you know, for the first time, without knowing all this backstory, none of it would have made sense.
Yeah,
you know?
We didn't talk about the dream sequence, or the vision of the future that Bruce has, the dream in the dream.
Yeah.
Because that must have been very off-putting if you don't have any context to put it in.
Yeah. And even, yeah... Because you've got the, because it is out of, it's like so left field at that point.
Because
you've got the parademons, right?
Yeah.
They show up.
Yeah.
And you're like, where the hell does parademons show up from? You've got the Superman army with the superhero, with the Superman logos on their shoulders.
Shoulders, yeah.
The Superman patch. And you got the Omega symbol burned into the land. Nobody understood what was going on there. Yeah. I hardly understood what was going on there. And I know all those things, you know, because it also doesn't line up. It's like, well, what actually happens is in that future state, is Superman now working as an enforcer for Darkseid? So is he one of Darkseid's lieutenants? And does he have an army that works with him in order to enforce Darkseid's will on Earth?
Yeah.
Like, is that what that was? And then Bruce was trying to find a way to take Superman down?
it's the most logical explanation for that scenario.
Because nothing else made sense.
Yeah. But I didn't mind Batman killing people in this potential future. It seemed strangely in character, because if those people were affected with the anti-life equation or whatever, then they're already lost. You know?
Yeah, just they're effectively zombies at that point. Yeah. I don't mind that. I don't mind Batman because he's willing to go all the way if he has to. He just hopes he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
You know? But in this case, it clearly seemed like he had to. I mean, he was prepared to kill Superman in this movie. Yeah. You know, he was there with the spear ready to drive it into his chest. So even at that stage, and that's also why it didn't ring true to who Batman was. He's not a murderer. This was premeditated murder, is what he was trying to do trying to kill Superman. There was premeditated murder. And the reason for why he would want to premeditate in cold blood, kill someone like this, didn't make any sense. Like, the reasons why Batman would be driven to that extreme didn't make any sense.
No, absolutely.
You know, and that is the hinge. That's the pivot point for the whole story. You know, that's the foundation of the whole story. And it didn't work. And that's why the whole thing kind of falls apart for me. Yeah. But he being driven to a point where he needs to stop something even worse from happening. Yeah, I mean, I can see Batman going there. You know, in one of the animated movies, Batman's prepared to blow up the whole of Apocalypse, you know? Yeah. And Darkseid actually tells him, out of everyone here, like out of Wonder Woman, Superman, you're the one that would actually go through with this plan. So I'm going to back off. You know? Yeah. So, you know, he would do it. He would just not, he would do it if it's a last resort. Like what he was trying to do in killing Superman just didn't make any sense.
No.
Because he wasn't trying to take Superman down. He wasn't trying to restrain him or kind of like limit him. He was actually trying to actually take him out.
Yeah, or bring him before a court of law. Like he did with all the other guys, the criminals.
Yeah, he wasn't going to just brand him, you know, with the kryptonite brand. He was going to drive that spear into his chest. Aside from Wonder Woman, I really didn't get a whole lot out of that movie. I thought there were just too many things. There were parts of it that looked visually spectacular. Yep. There was one scene in the Battle of Metropolis where the ship was crashing through the buildings and like going down. That just looked so cool.
Yeah.
And while Bruce Wayne was in his Jeep, which was the Jeep ad that they had on TV, it's like, oh, I've seen this sequence again. Like, they showed so many things from the movie that at the end, the only thing that I was left watching the movie for was to understand the story and see how all those sequences fit together. And that's why the story was so weak that was a failure as well. Cause I'd seen all the good bits anyway. Yeah. So Wonder Woman was like the only thing in there that was like kind of good for me. I thought Doomsday was kind of wasted.
Yeah.
As well. I don't know.
The whole part with the ship, the Kryptonian ship, was just such a lazy excuse to bring Doomsday into the mix and to get Lex Luthor to a certain level.
Yeah, to advance his plan. I mean, even how Lex Luthor got access to the ship.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Didn't make any sense. And then even how Lex knew what to do when he got into the ship. I mean, again, he proved himself to be the most resourceful and smart person in that movie. So, you know, you could put it down to that. But again, it just, you know, it wasn't organic. It felt forced.
Yeah.
It was all too convenient. All right. So Batman Superman, I think it's worth watching. So, you know, the review I gave my sister and her husband was just watch it on TV at home. Don't bother going out watching it.
The DVD comes out next week.
Yeah, so I think, just wait to watch it. They've got kids anyway, so they're more, I think, interested in watching Zootopia and Jungle Book at this point. So I think, go and do that. All right, so that's Batman v Superman. Utterly not the event cinema experience I was hoping for.
Yes, certainly.
So hopefully Marvel can bring it next week with Civil War.
Yeah, they will. You have, like I said, you have much more context and much more story behind Civil War. A lot of stuff is culminating into that movie.
The pieces are in place. We just need to watch it now. So, we understand a lot of the backstory, and the surprises hopefully will be good surprises. Yeah. Not like, why did they do that? Yeah. Right. So going back onto the Marvel train then, Daredevil season 2.
Have you seen season 2 yet?
Yeah, oh, okay. I've seen the whole thing.
Very good.
So I watched, I think I watched episodes 1-2. Well, I watched most of it, and then I had like a week break because my friends were here from the UK and they hadn't seen it. So I needed, so I couldn't finish watching it. Then I came back and watched the last 2 or 3 episodes. What did you think? I'll throw to you first.
Okay, it's a very good season. The Punisher works better than I anticipated. I think Elektra she feels like an accessory, but one that becomes a very important accessory. I don't think she got her due, so to say.
Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with the way they did Elektra, but I was quite intrigued by what they made out of her story and where she came from.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't know where they're going with that. I was, so are we just going to do, let's do a full spoiler review here because we've all seen.
Yeah.
Well, you and I have seen it. Yeah. And I think at this point, if you haven't seen it, tune out.
Yeah.
Because we're going to reveal everything. I wanted to know I thought something was going to come out of that clay pot or whatever that sarcophagus
was. Yeah, me too.
Something needed to have come out of it. At the same time, though, I think that is not where Daredevil goes. It doesn't create monsters like that.
No.
Although you could technically say Elektra is now going to become the monster. But what were they doing? Why were people putting all their blood into that thing if nothing was going to come out of it?
Out of it, yeah. And the big question is, I'm sorry, wasn't Elektra's training, or perhaps it's all a ruse? Perhaps that's the point where she needs to be for Stick's plan to work out? Who knows?
Ooh, do you think so? Do you think Stick is playing a funny game there where he's set up that whole thing?
Yeah, as much as he's a father person to Elektra and Daredevil, because not in the present, but in the flashbacks, you see that he doesn't live by his own code. He treats them like his children. You know, he carries them in his heart to a certain degree. So perhaps he's playing the long game with them both.
Yeah, you don't know, actually.
He's a bastard.
Because he could play. He goes both ways. You never quite know. Like, you never quite know whether to trust him or not.
Or not, yeah.
And you probably shouldn't. You probably shouldn't. Because he's quite, because he saves Elektra. So if she is that darkness, right? If she is that, I can't remember the actual term now, but if she is that darkness that they're trying to stop, but he was trying to train her to try to control it, even though he knew it was uncontrollable, then he seemingly delivers her to the bad guys anyway.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. I wonder, though, it's almost like, she needs to become whatever she is going to become before he and his side can actually take it out forever.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's what needs to happen
in
terms of the overall story.
Yeah.
And it'll be cool. Like, I don't, 'cause they're going to do Luke Cage next, right? So there's the Luke Cage series and then Iron Fist.
Yes.
I hope Iron Fist picks up with the Elektra story where this one leaves off.
Oh, that's
more, because Iron Fist brings in the magic aspect as well.
Yeah.
So it's interesting now because you're going to have Doctor Strange, Scarlet Witch will be, increasing her powers.
Yeah.
But Iron Fist is another mystical, magical character as well, with the martial arts. So that would play really well into like where the overall Marvel universe is in terms of its introduction of magic and bringing those magical kind of themes into its stories. Yeah. So I'm excited for that. I think Luke Cage is going to be interesting as well. The first teaser trailer, because they showed that at the end of Daredevil. Well, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
I like the actor. I like his eyes. He's so vulnerable. Yeah. He seems so vulnerable in his looks.
He's got a very, yeah, I know what you mean. He's got a, like, even though he's like impervious to any sort of damage, I guess you can say, he still comes across as very kind of approachable, and he's got a softness in his eyes. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. Like he's a guy that you could almost trust.
You know? Yes. In the shady universe,
if you just met him. Yeah. If you met him in a dark alley in Hell's Kitchen, you know, this is one of the good guys.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about the way they've cast that character and the way they've played him out so far.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Daredevil, I think the action sequences were good as well. I really thought the Punisher was awesome. I hadn't known that actor. I think it's, I want to say Josh Blumenthal, but I'm not sure. But I hadn't seen that actor before anyway.
Me too.
So I didn't have any baggage to associate him with, but he had been in, I think, I don't know. I want to say The Walking Dead or something, but I haven't seen it. But he played the Punisher awesomely. I thought that was done really well. He also had that, he had that crazy eyes thing going that sort of worked in that universe for that version of the Punisher. It was just great. And Charlie Cox, I think, continues to do a really good Daredevil. So that was,
yeah,
that
but
was good to see as well.
He felt a bit comfortable in the role, a bit too comfortable in the role in season two. And
what do you mean? Like, what do you mean by too comfortable? Like he wasn't trying hard enough, or?
I guess it's not Charlie Cox's fault, but everybody around him got to develop a lot. Because Foggy Nelson was awesome. Karen Page got more to do.
Yeah.
Then you have Elektra, you have the Punisher. You have Stick coming in, who's a very who chooses scenery in everything he's in. And then you have Charlie Cox, who's somehow still
he's still the same Daredevil that we saw at the end of season one.
Season one,
right? As in, you're saying that the character didn't really develop or change over time.
And he's
in this.
He's very sure of himself, almost like he knows, well, the show got my name in the title, so nothing too bad will happen to me.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. He's the Winnie the Pooh, right? Everyone else has the thing to do, he just is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I get that feeling as well. I think the only real dramatic change that I saw in him is when he has two, I think, major conversations with the Punisher.
Yeah.
And the first one, he's trying to convince the Punisher that you shouldn't be killing people. And then in the second one, towards the end of the show, he actually says, maybe your way is the right way.
Yeah.
Maybe this time we do have to actually kill. Who are they going? I can't even remember who they were going after now.
The Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Daredevil's case.
But the Punisher was after a specific person, right?
Yeah, the blacksmith.
Yeah, the blacksmith. And so Daredevil tells him, and he crosses himself.
Yeah.
Because he's Catholic. Before he says it, maybe this time we actually do have to just take this person out.
Yeah.
Which I thought was the only character change that Daredevil went through in this. Because in the first one, you know, he has a lot of conversations with the priest, which is the generally turns out to be the turning points for his character development. Whereas this time, I think the show moved quite fast, but he didn't really have any time to sit down and reflect.
Yeah.
You know, there was only one scene where he was kind of sitting down in his apartment. So after Elektra goes after Stick, and Stick sends those two guys in the car to go and deliver that knife, which disappeared actually, to somebody. And that car ends up finding its way to Daredevil's apartment. He's actually sitting in the dark in his apartment when he hears the car coming down the road. That's the only time he kind of had a moment to sort of sit down and think about what was going on. But we didn't get any feedback out of that scene. You know, we don't know what he was thinking about. We don't know what he changed or decided to do differently based on what was happening.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it is a TV show. There's probably no bonus scenes or director's cut at this point. He was the only one that kind of stayed a little bit static while everyone else around him kind of changed. So it's a good call out, I think.
Yeah, but then I guess we will get a third season or something with the Defenders. perhaps we get the change Daredevil there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he needs to learn something. He needs to make a change. It doesn't have to be a super dramatic change.
No,
and I think for what this season was, it was potentially, you know, again, about questioning his, you know, that, like that discussion we were having with Batman, questioning whether it's right, first of all, what he's doing and the way he's doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
What I like about it, though, unlike Superman, in Batman v Superman, Daredevil actually tries, he actually goes out and tries to have agency in affecting the way things are going. He's not just reacting to what's happening around him.
Yeah.
You know, so he's pretty cool that way.
And that that struggle that he puts himself under, especially when the trial against the Punisher is happening, and he's trying to... you know, he's fighting on three fronts, as Daredevil with Elektra, and in the courtroom.
Yeah. Though, if he was my defense attorney, I would go and fire him and go with Foggy because he's never around. It's like the worst part of Peter Parker, you know, like not being around. So, yeah, Foggy did a great job. And I think that was a part of obviously playing out Foggy's story in like cutting ties and stuff. But, I think as a lawyer, he might be good, but if you can't count on him,
then what good is
he? I'd fire him. Yeah. He's no Johnny Cochran, you know? but overall, I thought the season was a pretty strong season. I thought there was a lot going on, but it all kind of fit together really well. The only thing that I was disappointed with is the final action sequence at the end was a little bit flat to me.
Yeah.
I thought the assault on the hospital was kind of the highlight of the show.
Yeah.
I thought that was the best action sequence. I thought the parts with the kids that they had who were taken to hospital and how the kids kind of, I don't even know what was going on there, but they turned spooky.
Yeah.
And then they kind of gave themselves back to the hand and then like, you know, offered themselves up as sacrifices to whatever was in the sarcophagus thing. That was cool and kind of made me feel a little bit, what's the term? You know, made me feel a bit odd. I was this is weird.
It was very disturbing.
I don't know what's going on here. Yeah, this disturbed is probably the word I was looking for. It wigged me out.
Yeah,
so it was done really well, though. It was done really well, though. So interesting now. I mean, I'm also a little bit disappointed because I wanted more. I wanted to see what was going to happen next, but that was all kind of left for next season. So we just have to wait, I guess.
Yeah. And the Punisher's story resolvement was a bit rushed. You know, with the old army buddy and him showing up on that roof for no reason other than to shoot two guys and then, or show his getup, his new getup.
Yeah, he's like, I've got a costume too, you know. Yeah, that was rather convenient. Like, again, I was thinking, how did he even, you know, is he like the Predator? Is he attracted to violence? How did he even know where to show up? But I guess, you know, if he's the Punisher and if he's like monitoring police radio and stuff, he would have seen that. But It was resolved pretty quickly, but they need to keep him in play. Like, obviously, they can't kill him off or lock him up or anything. I mean, I guess they could have locked him up, but what prison can hold him? Because clearly, none can.
No.
he's obviously on the run, and hopefully, we'll see him again in future series. Maybe he'll show up in the Defenders.
That would be great. Yeah,
that's a while away. What do you think of the casting for Iron Fist? So they cast the kid or the guy from Game of Thrones who plays Loras Tyrell as Iron Fist. He's a British guy.
I forgot
his name.
It's interesting. And I get the whole controversy with whitewashing characters, but then Iron Fist was a white dude in the comic as well.
Yeah.
And
Iron Fist is, he was a blonde surfer guy, wasn't he? Like...
A very laid back, Iron Fist is kind of Marvel's Batman. When you take
really, I thought Daredevil was Marvel's Batman.
No, because the It's Carrie Andrews explored the whole thing in Living Weapon again in a more Dark Knight Returns fashion, but basically because his parents die on the way to Kunlun or on some expedition, and he gets taken into Kunlun.
Yeah,
and you know, I hope they play out the role he has as an ambassador for this part of the Marvel universe.
As in, like, what do you like? You know, not in an official capacity. Like, he's not like going to be like Black Panther showing up in the UN and stuff.
No, but the Thunderer takes him in and trains him and then sends him out into the world to you know, to give the world a softer introduction in, hey, there's this mystical city and this whole mystical. I mean, I don't know if they'll keep the story like they did in the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
But if they, you know, it's a reason for whitewashing the character when you could have cast an Asian person. But I've heard they bring in Shang-Chi into the series. So perhaps...
Who's his rival, right? So Shang-Chi was the one that says, why is he the one that is always fighting Danny Rand to get the Iron Fist title?
I'm not sure if that's Shang-Chi.
Okay.
But it would be awesome.
Who's Shang-Chi then?
The master of Kung Fu. I remember some old comic books I've read of him, but I only had one or two Shang-Chi comics, but I had a lot of Iron Fist comics I've read as a kid.
Most of my Iron Fist knowledge comes from the Ultimate Spider-Man TV show.
Yeah.
So it's effectively a young Danny Rand, right? But it's got that very teenage storyline thing where Danny Rand he goes to Kunlun, he trains in a school type environment with other kids, but he's the one that manages to pass all the tests to get the title of Iron Fist.
Yeah.
But because he is an outsider, there is a local guy who effectively serves the bully role, who says, I deserve that title, not you, because you're a foreigner, effectively. So I don't know whether that's Shang-Chi or what that person's name is, but
I'm
assuming that's going to be in the TV show. So he's going to come back and be hunting down Iron Fist in Hell's Kitchen, not the Hand per se, maybe he's affiliated with the Hand. You know, I don't know.
It's the Steel Serpent in the comic. I've known his name, but I forgot it. Fuck.
Right. This is where we need to bring in Ryan. So Ryan's the other person that we wanted to call into the podcast, probably for episode 4, because he's based in China. So he'd be able to give us some insights into what's going on. And how all these things fit together. Because, I mean, in previous conversations with Ryan that I've had, there have been some references to some Chinese cultural aspects, but I don't quite understand the full breadth of it. So it'd be cool to get that sort of input
as we go forward. Great. And it fits into the theme of the show, you know?
Yeah, we're gonna go international. And so we've got Americas and Europe covered. So now we can bring Asia in. I'm thinking, like, do I cover America or Australia? I'm not sure. But anyway, I'm based in America, so that's fine.
You cover America, though.
That'll work. Yeah, I'm in this time zone, so, you know, that's the important part. Cool. So, yeah, overall, I mean, Daredevil was good, so give us more.
Yeah.
Give us more. And excited for Iron Fist. I think there's obviously a lot more research we need to do on the Iron Fist side of things to truly understand that character. More than just what's been covered in Ultimate Spider-Man, the animated series.
Yeah, series, yeah. And I have to get out those comics again. I guess my brother has them, because he was...
Oh, really?
He was the residential kung fu guy.
Oh, right, okay. Is he actually trained in martial arts?
No. In bar fights, but not in martial arts.
Right, okay. I guess you can say that's a martial art.
Smashing somebody's head in with an ashtray.
Yeah. All right, cool. So that pretty much covers most of the agenda. The only thing we had left, because we're going to hit the 2-hour mark soon, so I want to wrap this up before then. Game of Thrones coming up. So I have stopped watching all of the trailers and stopped reading about what's going to be coming up this season, because again, I just want it to happen. Key things: Jon Snow, obviously. Everyone's like, is he dead? Is he alive? What's your thought on how they're gonna deal with that one?
Okay, I have to admit, I stopped watching Game of Thrones after season one, and I haven't.
Are you kidding me?
I haven't kept up with anything Game of Thrones related. I've seen a show where George R.R. Martin took the actress that plays Peter Dinklage's love interest around his hometown, and that was the last Game of Thrones exposure I had.
Really? Yeah. Why did you stop watching it? So the conversation is going to shift from the next season to why you stopped watching it.
It became kind of what The Walking Dead became for me, a very depressing endeavor, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get the appeal of the show, but it's just, I don't know, it's too dark, perhaps, in this point of my life for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It does get darker and darker and darker, and hope gets further and further away as the show progresses. So I can understand that if you don't want to get lost in a world that is kind of dark and depressing, then it's probably a good decision to let it go, right?
Yeah.
Because yeah, I mean, at this point of like where the characters go and where the show goes. So, I mean, if you stopped at the end of season one, so you stopped what? After Ned Stark dies.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then there's like, do you kind of know what happens next?
Well, I know that everybody's afraid that winter is coming and that a horde of zombies is getting ready. And is it Jon Snow and his buddies, right? Or the guardsmen, the northern guardsmen, ride out?
Yeah, the Night's Watch.
The Night's Watch, yeah. Thank you. They ride out to check up on whatever's out there in the woods.
Yeah.
And,
well, to go find, to go find out what's going on with the zombies, I guess. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that's how season one ends. It just gets worse from there. So, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not gonna try to pretty it up and make it, you know, make it sound appealing, because it's a long journey and it's a pretty painful journey, to tell you the truth.
Is season six coming up?
Yeah, I think it's season six.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, season six. So we're kind of overshot the books now. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen where even people who have read the books don't know what's going to happen next.
Oh.
Because the show's caught up with the books. And that's what makes it. So all the people who watched this TV show who had not read the books so far have had an experience where they don't know what these terrible surprises are going to be and when they're going to come.
God.
But the book people have always had that safety net.
Yeah.
Because we knew what was going to happen. It's just a matter of seeing it play out, which in itself was very exciting. But now, for the first time, book readers and non-book readers are at the same point. I was going to say disadvantage, because we have no idea about what's going to happen next and how things are going to play out. Which is both exciting and frightening for us at the same time, because in the show, in the kind of show that this is, anything can happen.
Nice,
Like no character is safe. We kind of have an overall idea of how the story is going to end, because like everybody kind of knows how the story is going to end.
Yeah.
But how are we going to get to that point? We don't know. And plus that. It's just a rumor around how the story is going to end. So it could end differently. We just think that is the most plausible, logical explanation of how things are going to play out. So that's why this season is so big, because nobody knows what's going to happen next, like, except for the George R. R. Martin and the producers of the show, and obviously the cast and crew. Right? So very exciting times. I won't get into any of the spoilers then, or not so much spoilers, but any into the discussion of what happens or what we think is going to happen this season, just because, well, it's not going to make any sense to you anyway, and it's going to be spoilers for seasons 2 to 5 or 6.
Okay.
Seasons 2 to 5.
I wouldn't mind if you tell me any expectations, because I'm always, even if I don't know something, I'm always eager to hear people talk about it, you know? Soak up some of the enthusiasm people have for stuff.
Yeah.
It's always nice to hear.
But it's going to give away a lot of what happened in previous seasons, though. So that's why I can't. That's not because there are things like from where you are in your understanding of the show, of the families that are involved, and like where the pieces of the chessboard were set when you stopped watching, to where they are now is so different. And so many things have happened in between that it's almost pointless for me to talk about it, because almost none of the same pieces are in play.
Okay, then I'm so sorry I didn't tell you earlier.
No, that's fine. It's fascinating to me for like why you stopped watching, and also, I mean, I can completely understand the reasons why, but also just to sort of just see how people react to these kinds of shows. Like I know like my sister and brother-in-law love it, but there are some people who just can't deal with so much of violence and so much of darkness in a TV show. So it's quite interesting.
I totally dug the first season, especially when it's the mountain decapitates his horse in season one.
Yes.
That was my favorite scene. He just gets up and whacks the head off the horse.
That's because the horse wasn't listening to him, right?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I enjoy I can enjoy such things for what they are. But you know, there's, it was just, it got boring. Boring is the wrong word. But watching something to just know who dies or who might survive, doesn't quite agree with me at this time.
But that's one of the things that makes Game of Thrones interesting, is it's written to, like, the story is written to subvert your expectations as a reader or a viewer, right?
Yeah.
So the first season, for example, which is the one that you're familiar with, it feels like when you read the story or watch the show that it's a story of Ned Stark as the Shining Light going south into the Hornet's Nest to bring order. Because like the classic hero story, he goes in and he brings order to King's Landing. You expect that to be the story. And even up until the point where he's on his knees with his head on the chopping block, you're thinking to yourself, he's going to get out of this somehow. Something's going to happen and he's going to get out. And then they chop his head off and you're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
Like the show is all about getting you to the point where you think you know what's going on. And then it completely changes everything
else.
You.
Yeah.
And it does that over and over again, because then after Ned Stark dies, and you've got the Stark family versus the Lannisters, and you're like, okay, now it's the story of Ned Stark's son who's going to get revenge for his father's death. And then you start believing in that, you know, because that's the story that you're now expecting to be told. And then it messes that. It messes you up with that one as well, right? And then you think, okay, now it's a story about something else. And that's what I'm saying, is like we all currently have an expectation for how the story is going to end. But the history of the show is that it always leads us to think that and then gives us something completely different, which messes us up. And it's like a roller coaster of a show, because you think you know what's going to happen, but the show already, so, you know, it's like the Batman Superman switching the story on Lex, you know?
Yeah.
the show leads you down to the path and makes you feel comfortable in that you know what's going to happen, and then
it
totally
just
blindsides you with something. Yeah. And that's, to me, you know, that's the joy of watching the show and reading the books. The other joy of it is the world building is just spectacular. Like, the show gives you it at a surface level, just because it's limited, even though it's got like 10 hours, it's limited in how much it can give you. But the books go into so much of depth and detail around the family, the history, the world, and how it all fits together. It's just, like, if you're still interested in the story, I would recommend reading the books. If you like
I got the books. I got them on my Kindle. I have to admit.
Yeah.
But the world building was pretty good in the show as well, I think, because due to the set dressing and the cinematography, you got a feeling for the different places, like King's Landing and the North. In such contrast, and all the other kingdoms, like the Mad Sisters' kingdom, who's still breastfeeding her son.
Oh yeah, the eerie, yeah.
The visual cues already suggested such a different history and developments in those domains.
Yeah, no, the show actually, and that's what made me excited when I first saw the trailer for the show, because I saw the trailer for the show and then I was like, well, I got to read this book before the show comes out, because it just looks awesome and I couldn't wait. Like, it looked like a world I wanted to get lost in, and I wasn't disappointed. The world building and through the set design, through the lighting effects, through the character design as well, the languages, it's done really, really well. Like, yeah, I mean, they pay a lot of attention to detail. Yeah. The only one I was, there's a kingdom called Dawn. I was a little bit disappointed with the way Dawn was shown. You haven't seen it, so it's not shown in season one. It's only shown in like season four or something. But it was still pretty good. I was just a little bit disappointed. And I think the reason why I was disappointed was I saw a lot of behind the scenes things with how they shot Dawn and that sequence. And so I'd known like the because what's fun about it is that these places don't exist on Earth, you know, like on our world. Yeah. They exist in Westeros. Whereas I'd known where in Spain they shot certain scenes. Yeah. So I was like, well, that's just Spain. You know, I can go there one day. You know? So it kind of took me out of it. And also the Dawn sequences in terms of story and like what was happening there was kind of not as good as what I was expecting in terms of story development. So it didn't really go very far. So I was like, I wanted more out of Dawn. Dawn's pretty cool. It's actually one of my favorite locations in the book. So I had a lot of expectation. But anyway, cool. I mean, yeah, I would recommend. I mean, if you can put up with this, with reading on your Kindle and reading the story, if you want something for good world building and stuff, it's great. But yeah, I'm excited anyway. So like I said, I'll let you know what I think of the current season without trying to give away any spoilers.
You can spoil me. I have no problem with spoilers. I'm beyond spoilers. Okay.
I am beyond spoilers. All right, cool. So the last thing that we had on our list was actually some comic recommendations. Did you wanna let us or try to convince me? So I'm trying to convince you about Game of Thrones. So you can flip the script. Well, what do you think I should be reading?
What should you be currently reading? Well, everybody should be reading Master Keaton, which I talked about in the first episode.
Oh yeah,
the manga about the insurance guy, because the sixth volume came out recently, and I wanted
It continues to be good.
Yeah, it's awesome. I wanted to stretch out the reading experience as long as possible, but I couldn't manage it beyond 2 days, and then I was I only read a chapter during breakfast, and it's like 6 or 7 chapters in the book, but on the second day I gave in.
Oh wow,
I read through the whole thing.
I just read the whole thing. Yeah. No, it sounds promising. So I'm probably going to look that up.
Yeah, it's really
so
nice.
I'm trying to read the Expanse series now. So I don't know if you know,
talked about it in
sci-fi show.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm trying to catch up with the books on that one. So after I finish this one off, I'll get to some comics, I think, because it's been a while since I've read comics. So Master Keaton definitely on the list.
Master Keaton, yeah. Then Transformers versus G.I. Joe.
Now this one is interesting.
Yeah, it's.
but you think definitely worth reading?
Yeah, it's worth reading because they threw out all the continuity of both franchises, and it's Tom Scioli on artwork, and he does this. You know, it looks like a very talented kid drew a comic with crayons.
Oh really?
Yeah, and it has the most not insane, but. It feels like an art house movie, like you're watching an art house movie with Transformers and G.I. Joe. and it has no regards for the continuity of either franchise. So it's
do they even explain how these two character worlds came together?
Yeah, Cybertron is invading Earth and the G.I. Joes are fighting back.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like something I'd be interested in then.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, so Cybertron, including the Autobots, like.
Yeah, yeah. Megatron has won the war and
all right.
Optimus is dead. And
right.
A few Autobots hide in Metroplex, who's not a city, but a starfish, a giant starfish making his way on Cybertron.
Okay.
It's just, it's such ideas. You know,
it feels experimental, yeah, like an outhouse movie.
And it's packed full of content. You're like, if you read an issue and you feel like you've read a trade, because some stories are resolved in a matter of a panel.
Wow. Nice. Okay. Interesting.
It's awesome.
All right. Definitely want to look at. Is it a multi-part or is it just like a one shot?
It ends with issue 13 in 2 months.
Right.
So I guess we get 3 trades out of it.
Okay. Cool. All right. So I'll probably wait for the trades.
Yeah. Two are already out, I think.
Okay.
And yeah, Gem and the Holograms.
And the art's good, right? So
yeah, the art.
So you said the art is like a crayon painting, but
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
crayon painting didn't sell it to me, but from the picture that you posted on your either Instagram or Tiny Letter, I'm not sure. It looked interesting. It looked cool.
Yeah, and you know, it's insane because it's Fortress Maximus and Scorponok putting their tongues out and acting as a ramp for Scarlet and the Mute Ninja.
The Mute Ninja, yeah. Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes, thank you.
It's favorite G.I. Joe character.
Yeah, he gets treated very well, very transcended in the
really?
Book. Yeah, I can't put it into words. It's such a weird experience. It's like watching an art house movie. You have no idea what's going on. You're trying to keep up with it.
But you're just loving the visual spectacle.
It's such a wholesome book, and it's the best. It's the best example of the conundrum that fanboys are in, because we want something new, and then we get something entirely new, and then we don't like what we got. You know, we screamed for pie, and we didn't like the pie.
Yes. Do Force Awakens. Make it look exactly like the other one.
Yeah, do Force Awakens.
We don't want episode 1, 2, and 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'll complain that it's too much like episode 4. Anyway, continue. Gem and the Holograms.
Gem and the Holograms. Awesome as ever. That book is... I shouldn't like this book, you know? I feel like I shouldn't like it, but it's so awesome. I enjoy every issue.
Is this your Teen Wolf?
Yes. No, Disney's Violetta is my Teen Wolf, because my niece is watching it, and now I'm watching the third season, and I've worked at the gig. They had a live show last year in September, and one of the guys was practicing his German and was walking backstage and shouted, "I love you" in German. But he didn't see me, and he ended up standing before me and shouting, "I love you" at me. And I just told him, "And I love you too." And we shook hands, and I'm still waiting for him to call me.
Oh, I give, and I don't get anything.
I get nothing back in return.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. And on your last update, in your Tiny Letter, you also had a 3CPO, C-3PO comic as well. That looked rather interesting. I was very intrigued at that one.
It was.
Is that going to be on your top 5 recommendation list as well?
Yes. Yeah. Now it is.
Okay. No. Because it looked like you weren't going to notice it. Sorry. It looked like you weren't going to mention it. I need coffee.
No, because I thought, you know, I mention Sirius a whole series instead of just a one shot. But if you like Star Wars and if you want to know where C-3PO's red arm comes from, you should read it, because it's also a very interesting dissection of the place that droids have in the Star Wars universe, especially in terms of their memory, because erase their memories gets thrown around pretty often in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
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 And that red arm is, I don't want to spoil it, that red arm is just more than a cosmetic change. It really means something to C-3PO, at least, in this state of memory that he's in.
Interesting. All right. No, that's just a one shot, right? Yeah. So I'll definitely look that up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great read. Cool. It's a great read. It's a horror comic with droids that goes into philosophizing about memory.
Wow, this sounds like one of those deep philosophical anime shows, like Evangelion or something. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, no. So being a one shot, I can just get through that one quickly. I think so. I want to know it from the one panel sequence that you posted. It looks that conversation, which I guess was towards the end of of the book, it looked very intriguing. So I want to see, one, where the red arm comes from, obviously from a plot point of view, but more interested in just where droids fit in and how they relate to one another. That would be quite interesting.
Yeah. And it's
I mean, that's all part of the world building for the Star Wars universe, right?
And it's so nice to see C-3PO develop, to say.
Yeah, because he's more of a comic relief character than anything. Like, does he actually do anything that actually helps? Is he just around being awkward, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he's...
Because R2 is the one that's always hacking into something and, like, opening up doors and stuff. What does 3PO really do? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, he holds the communicator in A New Hope.
Yeah. There you go.
Because R2 has his hands full with hacking stuff. Yeah.
No, that's cool. All right, cool. All right, so we'll get back to your series recommendations then.
The last one I wanted to recommend is Klaus, which is the origin story of Santa Claus as told by Grant Morrison.
Oh, really?
Which is insane.
I have not heard of this one, but I can only imagine.
it's great. They should make a movie out of this. This could make the perfect Christmas movie.
Who is that, a DC
it's with
comic or?
Boom, I think. Boom or IDW.
Okay.
But it plays out like The Dark Knight Returns. But Santa Claus returns.
Nice. He has to climb out of a pit without rope. Is that what happens?
No, there is a scene where somebody enters his home and Klaus is sitting on his chair. How did you get in? And he says, I came in through the chimney. Of course he comes in through the chimney.
My tricks. Yeah. You really should have seen that one coming. Really should have seen that one coming. That sounds cool. That sounds cool. So is it Christmas themed, or is it just about is it just kind of happening with Santa Claus as a character, but not really a Christmas theme? So is it set in, like, he has to deliver the presents by midnight? I don't know.
It has a Christmas theme, but they call it Yule time.
Okay.
I guess back to the tradition of the northern people of keeping evergreen around.
Yeah.
He makes presents because he dropped some mushrooms and tripped about some aliens, and when he wakes up, he carved action figures and stuff. He makes action figures. You know, the whole thing is set in a medieval environment, and he hands out action figures. Yeah,
that's interesting.
It's great.
I can. I mean, Grant Morrison really looks into kind of, you know, the origin and the meaning of these characters in order to craft the stories. So it'll be interesting to see his take on Santa Claus, actually.
Yeah.
It should be.
You know,
I like the Santa Claus. I mean, my story that I would like to do with Santa Claus It's a dark, twisted one. Is Santa Claus is a serial killer? and the police are like trying to track him down. So it'll be kind of like a serial killer with like the FBI or some agency trying to like hunt down the serial killer. And obviously he comes in through the chimney. That's an idea I had. I don't know. It was like probably some Christmases ago when I was in high school or something. I was like, what if Santa Claus was
a serial killer?
And recently, last Christmas, there was a horror movie with Santa Claus as well. There was a horror movie, a Christmas-themed horror movie with the anti-Santa Claus. Like there was a family and there were some kids who were being annoying and the parents are like, if you aren't happy during Christmas, then the evil Santa Claus will get you. And I can't remember what it's called and I didn't watch it, but I was like, that's almost my idea.
Wasn't that with a wrestler?
Was it? It was an actual horror movie. Like it wasn't a parody movie or anything. I don't know. Oh. It may have been with a wrestler. I don't know enough wrestlers except The Rock.
Yeah, me too these days. I'm completely out of the loop with wrestling, which is sad somehow.
Sad.
Yeah, it took up a very big chunk of my life.
Seriously? Yeah. You were a WWE fan? Yeah.
Back when they were called WWF.
WWF, so like The Undertaker and Hulk Hogan. And
I went to a lot of live shows in Germany and Austria. Oh, wow.
Well, living in the Southern Hemisphere, we didn't have any live shows, I don't think. Yeah. So I only ever saw... So my cousins used to watch it when I was a kid. So I know of the characters, but I've never actually watched it myself. And that's like watching it on TV. Somebody told me really early on that it was fake, so I didn't really bother. It was more theater at that point.
Yeah. And us too, but still the spectacle of the whole thing, you know? Modern gladiator fights. Yeah. But for children.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you know, again, it's entertainment, right? So pretty fun. Cool. So I think we've actually wrapped up our agenda today, and we did it in a whopping
2 hours. Yeah,
we're going to probably have to cut some bits out of our sound quality connection issues in the middle somewhere. So we're going to have to take care of that. But otherwise, I think pretty good.
Yeah, we're pretty well.
All right. So next one will be more of a Civil War take, right? It'll be our dissection of Civil War after we've both seen it. You haven't got your tickets yet?
No, I haven't booked any tickets yet. Still waiting on my schedule.
Okay. Cool. Well, I won't give you any spoilers.
That's so nice of you. Because I guess everybody at work and the rest of the internet will take care of that.
Yeah. I think, I like to not give spoilers. So, although I'm like very specific definition of what a spoiler is. So a spoiler is only something that's actually going to happen in the movie and everybody knows if it's a rumor, it's not a spoiler.
No.
People give spoiler warnings for rumors or what they think could happen. Like, if it could happen and nobody knows that it's going to happen for sure, then that's not a spoiler. It's a rumor. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, cool. So I'm like super hungry now because I did this before having breakfast.
So I'm
looking forward to eating something and having more coffee because I clearly need it at this point.
And I'm going to get supper.
Yeah. International podcasting. Yeah. Love it.
Great times.
All right. Cool. So thanks everyone for listening and we'll catch you next time.
See you then. Bye bye. Well, hear you then.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. You can reach us via email at asteroidsinexile@gmail.com. Our blog can be found at asteroidsinexile.wordpress.com. You can find us on Instagram under the username Asteroids in Exile. Our intro and outro music comes courtesy of the band Safe States, which you can find on Bandcamp. Thank you for your time. You'll be hearing from us.
Again, hands up.
Hands up!